Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the podcast and stick it up here in the feed. Except, of course, like times like this where I saved up a few books that I read and not reviewed yet, purely just because I've not had time and I've been travelling too much and been doing other bits and pieces. So the book that I'm reviewing now, I actually finished reading probably about a week and a half ago, maybe a bit longer than that. And I finished another book since then and got all the way through yet another book, but I'm actually putting off reading this other book, like this third book in a row, just so I don't have like three books to review in a row. Although really what I should do is just finish it and start another few books as well. Anyway, this book that I'm reviewing today is called Roadside Picnic by a pair of Russian brothers called Arkady and Boris Strugatsky. And I've actually tried reading one of their previous books, or previously I've tried reading another one of their books, because they're quite highly recommended by many listeners of this podcast. And someone said, hey, you should check out the Strugatsky brothers. How about the Final Circle of Paradise? So I started reading that, and I have it here on my iPod and iPhone, and I read it, but it was a bit weird because everything was really foreign. Now, I don't mind foreign stuff in science fiction, but it's like there was this guy who went into this town and he was a reporter, or maybe a spy, or maybe there's just a writer or something. He was going round and there was these student protests and there was this other thing and he was meeting up with these people and then there was some police brutality and there's this other stuff going on, and it was just these random stuff, and I couldn't really connect to it, and I couldn't work out what was going on. I mean, it wasn't bad. It never really gripped me. I was kept on waiting for a story to start. And what was probably interesting for people in 1970s Russia or Eastern Bloc countries, it just wasn't gripping me or grabbing me in any way at all, and I couldn't really, couldn't get into it. So it's just sitting there, half finished or half started. I don't know, which way you want to look at it, glass half full or whatever. So there I was, and that was like last year I started reading that, I think. And then the other day a few weeks ago, I was in the English bookshop around the corner one evening, and someone was flicking through these books, and I spotted there Roadside Picnic by Arkady and Boris Strugatsky. So I was like, can I have that book? And I said, yeah. So I took it home and started reading it, and I got most of the way through actually just reading in the book, and then I decided not to take it with me when I travelled, and I found a copy online, because it's quite an old book, so you can find ebook versions, or it was just like a HTML or text version. So I put that on my iPod and carried on reading it. And I finished it quite quickly, actually, because it's not a very long book. It's quite a brisk read, I thought it was quite interesting. So I'll just get straight into it. The idea is this. It's set in, I think it's either somewhere in North America, I think it's in Canada. And the idea is that that there's some visitations. It's not really says where it's when it's set, but you're thinking sort of maybe like it's meant to be like 1980s North America or something like that, or late 70s North America, that kind of era, like set just after it was written, I guess it's meant to be anyway. And so what happens is that it's there's this visitation by aliens, or by some alien creatures or alien forces or something like that, in six different points around the world. And the book opens up with this explanation of literally the scientist, someone's talking to a scientist and saying, yes, you were the one who worked out what the pattern of the visitation zones were across the planet, and if you use this, it plots this curve, so we can even tell where they've come from just from the different places that they landed on the planet. It's some kind of conic intersection or projection onto the globe, onto a sphere, and they could work out where it comes from. It's never fully explained, but you sort of get the idea that the only thing that we've actually worked out so far about this alien visitation is that they visited, and B, that they came from a certain direction and left again. So all the aliens, they turned up, stayed for a few hours, and then disappeared. Whereas nobody really saw them, or nobody survived the in the lab. landing spaces, that what they call the zones, and everyone inside the zones was either struck dead with a plague, or they were blinded, or weird things happened to them. And then the aliens left, and they left behind all kinds of rubbish. And later on, we actually get a conversation between two scientists, where one of the scientists explains pretty much the idea behind the title of the book, A Roadside Picnic. And they're saying, hey, just imagine, humans go out, and they're traveling along the road, and they say, oh, that's a nice forest, let's go into this clearing in this forest and have a picnic. And no humans have ever been into that forest clearing before, so they go in there, and when they pack away, they leave behind loads of crumbs and crisp packets and spark plugs and all these other things that I mentioned there in the book. And then they leave, and then they go, and then all the cockroaches and mice and squirrels and pigeons and other animals around all sneak up and go, oh, what's all this stuff here? What's this bit of plastic bag? And they just don't understand anything. They can't read the writing. They can't do anything. And they're just completely overwhelmed by the level of technology. So that's what happens here, is that there's loads and loads of leftover technology behind loads of these different widgets, which I'll get into later on. And in these zones, these six zones around, you know, they're a few miles across. I can't actually remember exactly the scale of the zones, but there's the zone that we're talking about in Canada is... it was sort of like in the middle of a small town or a medium-sized town. And so half the town was in the zone and the other half of the town was outside of the zone, and then there's parts in the country as well. So what happens is that the different militaries and the different armies, they surround the zones and to, you know, protect people going in and out, because inside the zones are all these weird effects, like, you know, gravity doesn't work very well in some places, and other times there's random lightning going off, and there's so many weird things that pretty much if you go into the zone, you're probably gonna die. But there's all these different kinds of leftover alien technology there, and people want it. So you get these people called the Stalkers. And they go inside and they know different routes and they know different tricks and different ways to get through in, pick stuff up and get out. So then a big sort of black market springs up in the towns around the zones, or in the areas around the zones, where people are bringing out alien technology and selling it to interested parties and then getting the money and then, you know, living nicely. But it's a very much... Like a frontier town there as well. It's a bit of a gold rush, but a very, very, very deadly gold rush. So that's the setup there. And again, I'm not really spoiling anything with that. That's all set up within the first two chapters of the book. The plot, though, is quite interesting. I really did enjoy it, but it's very much like a slice of life. Like I say, it starts off with this explanation of, you know, of the zones and of the alien visitation, and we go straight into then an expedition into the zone between a stalker called Red. I can't remember his full name, but his nickname, his stalker name, is Red, because they've all got nicknames like Boots and Goggles and this and that. You know, I can't really remember all of the different names as well. But Red, he used to be completely a stalker. Like, it's an illegal thing. You're not allowed to do this. But then he signs up as an assistant to, like, the scientists. And he goes in with two scientists, with a Russian scientist and an assistant, and he's the other assistant, and he goes in into the one of the zones. And that's really where you get the first hint of danger, or not even a hint, the first sort of dangerous part, and what can happen or what can't happen, and the kind of things that you've got to look out for. And it's actually really tense, because you think, okay, I know that one in three people die each time they go into the zone. So pretty much you've got to be really, really good to get in and out of the zone alive time after time. And Red is that good. But the people that he's with, he's literally saying, look, whatever I say is the law. If you don't do it, you're risking all of us. So if I tell you to do something, do it. And they're like, oh, okay. He's like, no, seriously, I'm not kidding around. If I tell you to do something, do it. And they're like, no, seriously. And then he's like, no, really, seriously. If I tell you to do something, do it. Without question at all. And they're like, yeah, okay, we understand. And then he's like, no, seriously. No, he doesn't go into that much detail. But it's that dangerous that he really has to keep everything set and everything worked out. And they do get in and out of the zone. And you're thinking, okay, did they get away with it? Because this is one thing that happens. But I don't really want to spoil it. But you realize just how dangerous it is. The reason that they're going in there is one of the bits of alien tech is called an empty. And what an empty is, it's like a disc and then another disc, and they're joined together, but by nothing that humans can detect. So it's as if it's two ends of, say, a large pipe like two lids of a large pipe, but the pipe isn't there. So you've just got two lids, but they still, you know, they're still fixed together in space, which is really quite interesting. I really enjoy that part. And so Red goes, oh, this is an empty, but, you know, I know of a place where there's a full empty, an empty with something between the two ends of the empty. They're like, oh, okay, what could this be? And they go in and do it. So anyway, then in the middle part is actually of the book is there's some other like conversations between scientists and other characters, really. But what we really do have is like lots of parts, lots of scenes with Red and some other stalkers and the people that they sell stuff to as they do different things, and it's set over many years actually. So first of all, when Red gets out of the zone, the first thing that we find out is that his girlfriend Guta is pregnant. And one thing that they know is that if they have a child, because Red goes in and out of the zone all the time and they live too close, if they have a child, it's probably not going to survive, or it's going to be mutated in some ways. And of course, when it first comes out, you first meet the child, it isn't and it's fine. But then over the years, it slowly mutates. But there's lots of other stuff going on as well. And it reflects the different stages of thought about the zone, and also the different societies that builds up around the zone, and what Red's role and other people's roles is in that society, as sort of it goes through the stages of sort of like a frontier town, and then it has different prosperity, and then this other thing happens, and then that thing happens. And I don't want to spoil it too much. The final part though of the book, after going into lots of different black background and lots of different small scenes and longer scenes and shorter scenes, is that Red goes back into the zone for a big finale, another big trip into the zone. Actually, throughout the book, he goes into the zone a few times, but really at the beginning of the novel and then the last section of the novel is the most tense and actually some of the most enjoyable parts of the novel. I'm not saying that all the stuff that takes place in the town where he's going around and he's trying to do deals here and trying to get through things here and other people are wheeling and dealing as well, I'm not to say that isn't as interesting, but it's... You always seem to be at one step removed from the action. It's a bit like the film Cloverfield, where like an alien arrives and stuff, but then they're not... It's not always like you're not always at the center of the action. At the beginning, you feel like you are because, you know, Red is working with the scientists. And at the end, you also feel like you're part of the action because it's, you know, things come to a head and he goes in to get like the most powerful and legendary random bit of leftover text, this artifact. You know, it's this legendary piece, and he goes in and he knows where it is as well. So you feel like the beginning of the book is really important, the end of the book is really important, whereas the stuff in between is very strange because it's like more minor characters doing things, and you realize that there's whole other things going on around the world as technology moves forward, but they're still stuck in this frontier town and not quite sure what's going on around. Red, as a main character, I actually thought was quite interesting. Something very interesting that happens here is that in the first part that you meet Red, it's all told in the first person. And then around about a quarter of the way through the book, or a third of the way through the book, it suddenly switches, and then it's all told in the third person, like Red is now doing this, and he does that, and he does this, and he's thinking this. And it's a really strange but quite clever way of getting more depth with this character, that you say what he's thinking, and he's thinking this, and he's thinking this, and he's thinking this, and then suddenly it switches and you realize that actually he was thinking that, but now you can sort of see a wider perspective on his character. And that's what I really like, having, you know, two perspectives on the same character. The other characters, we do have some complexity, but not as much as Red. Of course, he is the main character, but they do fulfill their roles. And sometimes, you know, Red is out of the scene for a while, and you have to go through with the different scientists or these other you know, stalkers and these other traders that live around there. And I thought the characters were well drawn. And science and technology is also really enjoyable, because a lot of the stuff that takes place in science fiction is sort of given like an easy explanation. It's like, oh yeah, it's the widgely bub and the biddy bop, and it's just some techno babble piece and things. It's sufficiently advanced to be magic, but it's given a label. That is a hyperdrive, or this is a transporter device, or this is that, or this is this. And we seem to be happy with it. And there's a comment right at the beginning by Red. He says something like, a scientist puts a label on something and is then happy. In fact, I actually made a note of this. Let me look at my notes here. I copied this from the text version here. It says, Red is talking like they find something. The scientist finds this little... thing and this little gravitational concentration kind of effect within the zone, and And Red describes him like this. He says, oh, his face was calm and clear. Obviously, he understood. They're all like that, the eggheads. The most important thing for them is to find a name for things. Until he had come up with a name, he was too pathetic to look at. A real idiot. But now that he had some label like Gravy Concentrate, he thought that he understood everything. And life was a breeze. And it's great that it's sort of like a comment, not just about this sort of egghead scientist, but like people who write and read, mainly who read science fiction. It's like, oh, when we get a name for something, we can put a label on it and we understand it and everything's a breeze. But with a lot of the tech here, we don't really get... We get some labels for the weird technological things that take place in this book. But like I say, it's no less or more plausible than other weird science fiction. You know, it's sufficiently advanced to be, you know, thought of as magic and all that. But it's nothing more than labeled. It's never nothing is ever explained, mainly because it's way above us and way more advanced than us. And it actually makes it more interesting in that way for me, you know, more challenging as a science fiction. You're like, okay, this is science fiction. Yeah, it's science fiction. But why would we call this, you know, why would this be more magical technology where the other technology in the same at the same level isn't magical technology? And it's really, yeah, we're the eggheads, and the most important thing is to just have a name for something. So all of the names in this novel for the different kinds of artifacts that they find in the different effects. You've got like the empties, the full empty. You've got the so-sos, which are these little unlimited batteries that which and they sort of split off from each other. They bud off from each other, and so you can get more and more of them. And later on in the book, they're being these are being used to power cars and things like that. And you get there's bracelets. I can't remember what the bracelet's for, but there's lots of stuff which people find and they don't explain. For example, within the zone itself, you get these areas where there's lightning and you get these areas which crunch people up and these other areas where the gravity is so intense that you just get squashed down into nothingness. And another area where these weird lights come out from the inside of buildings and you think, wow, there's something living in there, but you can't get close. And there's these different kinds of gels. And if you get some gel attached to you or on you, it starts turning you into jelly. So you've got to have, you know, your leg amputated if you touch the jelly. And these other bits of wisps of smoke. And if you touch that, weird stuff happens. But then it's not just the things that happen. There's also these weird, weird kind of effects. For example, if you were in the zone and then you moved away from the zone, like or too far away from the zone, people around you would start dying. It tells a story of, I think it was a dentist or a hairdresser or someone who was in the zone when the aliens visited, and then he went to live in Chicago, and then Chicago was hit by flooding and typhoons, and 90% of his patients died, which is a really weird effect. It reminds me a bit of Ian M. Banks's science fiction novel called Against the Dark Background, and they're trying to find a gun. And what happens when you point this gun at something? The person is killed, but you don't even know how the person is going to die. You just pull the trigger, and a meteorite might drop out the sky and hit them, or they might be struck by lightning, or they might just have a heart attack, or they'll get hit by a car randomly. But you know, or if you point it at a city and you know and press it, it'll be destroyed in a flood or a fire or something. So you're never quite sure how it's going to work. But there's some quite kind of twist of causality or twist of the like fundamental rules of the universe which makes things happen which can't be understood, in the same way that, you know, the children of people who go into the zone have got mutants, like they mutate later on and things like that, which I found all of these different things are very interesting, mainly because it's almost mundane for the people who live next to it. It's like, oh yeah, it's a so-so, oh yeah, it's a widget, oh yeah, it's a pin, oh yeah, it's this, that happens, yeah, okay, that's great. And again, I'm not giving away everything, but there's other weird stuff that takes place that they think, wait a second, that can't, oh, but the people are just living with it. Oh, okay, that's a bit weird. And that's cool. Moving on, what else we got? Oh yeah, the writing. It's a translation, very good translation. It's quite, like I say before, it's quite a light read, a quick read, very entertaining. And one thing that really amazes me is how it doesn't feel dated at all. It could literally be written now. You know, it could have been written in the last 10 years for all you know, mainly because there's no pop culture references. Because it was written in 1970s Russia, Soviet Russia, and I'm sure there was, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of popular culture to reference that we would understand now. Maybe there are pop culture references, but I just don't pick up on them. And also, there's very little to do with, like, the technology of the time it was written. It's mostly to do with technology way more advanced than us humans now have our technology, which means that Because it's sort of like the technology of the aliens is so far advanced, even our technology today, the technology of the aliens is still so far advanced. And I thought this was very clever, just bringing back to the science and technology. Because the science and technology of the aliens is so far advanced, it means that it's still relevant. Because often you find, oh, yes, the aliens come down and do this. And you're like, yeah, but we can do that now. Even though the book was written 10 years ago, computer technology and other technology has caught up so far. It's like my first novel. I'm reading it now. You know, I read back a bit of it now, and it's talking about, you know, the augmented reality goggles. And I'm like, yeah, but that's what the iPhone can do, you know, with the different things now. And I only released it last year, like less than a year ago. It already feels dated. This novel doesn't feel dated at all, because the alien technology is just way so far out of whack. It becomes like that. And also, what else do I want to say? Yeah, a very good translation. I guess it must be a good translation, because I found it very easy to read. I think, have I reviewed another book which is translated? I guess the only one that was Jules Verne is probably the only other novel that I've read which has been, you know, translated from a different language than English. Anyway, onto the themes. What people say, or what I've heard people say, is that this has got a lot of social commentary. And I can understand what they're saying. The thing is, the society in which this was written and for which this book was written, which is Soviet Russia and Eastern Bloc countries, I'm not familiar with it at all. So I'm sure there's many, many layers of cultural references and commentary and satire, probably a lot that I'm missing. I just don't get it at all. For example, I mean, there's some parts which I can sort of pick up on in a way, like the government is always clamping down in one way or another. For example, at one point they're like, oh yeah, we're trying to get everyone to move away from the thing, you know, move away. So it's doing like and this is like, of course, the North American government or Canadian government or whatever's, you know, the government or the agency in charge of visitation matters or whatever. It's like, okay, everyone's moving away from the zones. We're trying to get everyone away from the zones. Everyone away from the zones. And then, a few years later in the timeline of the book, it's like, okay, everyone has to stay exactly where they are. Nobody's allowed to move away. And it's sort of like the everyone out. Oh, no, everyone stay put. Kind of people moving in Soviet Russia and Soviet bloc countries, which is probably picking up again. And also there's a lot about, it seems to be about the strength of the free market, but also very much about the dangers of the free market as well. Because if there's money, people do dangerous things for the money. And it's not just dangerous for themselves, but also dangerous for other people. And of course, there's a lot of sort of commentary there as well. However, like I'm saying, there's probably another loads more layers of the social commentary that I'm missing. Of course, another one of the main themes is, you know, aliens, and can we ever really understand them? Is it likely that we're ever going to discover another alien civilization which is either at our level, you know, at our level that we can understand them on more of a, you know, a 1-to-1 or even a 1-to-10 kind of situation, with us at number 1 and them also at 1 or 10? Or if we're at 10, they're at 1, we'll understand them, but they'll be way below us and not as actually very interesting. Or is it going to be a 1-to-1,000,000 or a 1-to-10,000,000 like it is in this book? Like, we're at level 1 and the aliens are at level, you know, 1,000 or 1,000,000 or something, that which are just so far ahead of us that we can't understand. And what is actually more likely? You know, if they're going to visit us, are they going to be at our level or another level? And that's actually quite uncomfortable, you know, thinking for most science fiction, that we just don't, it's just not done very often. It is sometimes done, but it's often in the terms of big dumb objects. Big dumb objects comes through and it's like, oh wow, that's amazing. But even big dumb objects, they're still objects, and we can still understand them as objects. It doesn't matter how big it is, it's Ringworld, but in the end we understand it on a human level. It's like, oh, it was built for this and it's going in that direction, or it's doing this or it's this kind of weapon, or it's that, it was built for that purpose, and we understand it. Whereas here it's just like, okay, it's just so completely beyond us that we don't understand, which is where we would be to any kind of other animal or other creature or other even conscious being in so many different ways. And I really enjoyed that kind of exploration and in the face of it. And yet, like I'm saying before, the end of the book I thought was really good. Actually, I didn't mention this, actually, come to think of it. I was just looking at the conclusion, and I've not got that yet on my notes here. When the novel first finished, I thought, well, that was good, but it wasn't great. But then I realized that I was only thinking that because it was a short story and it does end quite abruptly, and you're like, oh, is that it? Oh, that can't be the end. And I was thinking, oh man, that's a bit annoying at the end. And then I actually started thinking about it, you know, and then I was like, oh no, that's really good. And then I, you know, it kept with me, and I kept on thinking back to it over the next few days and remembering more and more passages in the book and different ideas, like, over and over. And then I realized that it wasn't too short. And yes, it did end abruptly, but it ended perfectly because, like I say, it's very difficult to know when to end a story in sort of like a slice of life here, a slice of life there, this is happening, where it really isn't the plotting that is moving you forward. It's more the different ideas and just seeing what's happening and the changing of society. And of course, there are plots that go through and different storylines that go through and different characters doing something. But actually how it ended, I thought was really disappointing, like within a minute of it finishing. And then within about half an hour of it finishing, I was like, actually, no, that is a really quite awesome ending. But it is one that has to make you think. And you have to think a little bit as you're reading the end of this. Anyway, I don't want to give it away, though, but keep reading to the end. It is definitely worth it. So I'm going to give this book 4 stars. It is, of course, meant to be very influential, one of the most read science fiction books in the world or something like that. And it is, as I say, it is actually very, very good. Certainly a lot more accessible than The Final Circle of Paradise, which is another one of the Strugetsky brothers novels, which maybe I'll try and finish it now, or maybe I'll go on and try a different one of their novels. So if you enjoy this review, or if you enjoyed reading this book as well, and you know a better book than Final Circle of Paradise by the Strugetsky brothers, email me at luke@juggler.net. And get in contact, or if you've got any other recommendation as well. The next book that I'm going to read, I've already finished it, it's very strange how this happens, but it's another book by a team of writers, a brother and brother team of writers. Let me just bring it up here so I can see the names. Oh, I can't find it now. Anyway, so it's called The Unincorporated Man, and again, I'm trying to find the names of it, but I listened to it as an audiobook and I deleted it because I finished it, and now I've deleted the audiobook and I can't actually find the names of the people who wrote it. So it's Danny and something Colin or something like that. It's called The Unincorporated Man. Of course, I'll review it probably tomorrow and upload it tomorrow, and you'll know all about it then. But it's a very interesting book, and again, written from a different political perspective than most science fiction is, or a lot of science fiction is. That's it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge at Twitter for all different updates. Read my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. Subscribe to my other podcast, my travel podcast, so you can read about that there as well on the blog. And finally, go to goodreads.com/LukeBurridge and suggest books through there and send me messages through there. Oh, also, I do actually have many, many emails, probably around about 12, 13 different emails, actually more than that, of people who've emailed me over the last 2 weeks. And I always say, yeah, I reply to every single email and every message that I get. And it's just been sitting there building up more and more in my inbox because I've just been busy doing other stuff, traveling here and there, doing lots of different things too. But yes, do email me and I do get back in contact and stuff like that. Or maybe instead of emailing you back individually, the next episode will be and a half episode, and I'll just reply to all of the emails in an episode so I don't need to email back. I don't know. Maybe I'll do that. We'll see how it goes over the next few days. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.